we don't resign ourselves to that in path work. We start there, we work that through, and see if we can help you get to a higher place to serve, to contribute, and to enliven your own transformation. So that's the difference between the two shoulds, and the board and I will be working on that some. But I really urge you, if you are moved by the work, there's a calling there for you to step into some leadership responsibility in the community. So that it's a shared among us, we all care about it and we're all invested in it in some way. Any other announcements? Connections team, Joe, logistics, Barb. Okay. We're good to go?
Yes.
So, slide number one. I want to welcome you to Pittsburgh Pathwork Lecture Series tonight. I give a little fun history. In October of 2009, a very small group of us gathered, and some of you were there, in Diana Dolan's living room in Friendship for the first ever Pathwork Lecture presented in Pittsburgh. How many of you were there? Who was there? Oh, quite a few of you. Okay. I think we have a couple of people in this room who have never missed a single lecture. Believe it or not, 55 lectures and 6 years later, we are an official Pathwork community. And for those of you who were there, you will remember that I and my daughters came schlepping in with our easels and newsprints and boom boxes and mints and waters. Remember that?
Yes.
And tonight we have these advanced technologies thanks to Billy Weil. As a matter of fact, you know, tonight I might not even be able to coordinate my remarks with this brilliant technology. We are an official Pathwork community. I think that's important for you to know. We have achieved a nonprofit status so that if you want to contribute for tax purposes to Pathwork to get a tax deduction, if that's where you would like your money to go because you would like to see this work forwarded in the Pittsburgh community, you now can do that. We hold Pathwork workshops a few times a year, attended at full capacity every time. We have a waiting list for the workshops. We sponsored a 3-year meditation study group, and we're sponsoring 2 advanced training Pathwork programs, both at full capacity. Raise your hand if you're an advanced training Pathwork program. A bunch of you, which is just wonderful. And this is a huge level of commitment. Can I share what you shared with me, Trudy? Sure. I mean, you get free to say no. Trudy came in to me and she said, oh, this Pathwork, I tell you. For 60 years, I thought it was this. And now I see it's that. And like she's talking about a crumbling that's kind of happening with her, which Billy will beautifully do an exercise with us on later. Like if we really start to take these principles on, things start getting shaken up and they get, there is a crumbling and there's a kind of scary, well, there was this and I'm done with that, but the new hasn't emerged yet. So I'm kind of sitting in an existential impasse and it's scary. And some others of you have said the same things. You know, like, oh, I don't know about this. You know, like there was a time that I knew what to do with my crazy husband. I would blame him, judge him, correct him, try to fix him, threaten to kick him out. I don't get to do that anymore. What am I supposed to be doing? You know, so things start to get shaken up, and that's a really, really good thing. You know, it is so clear to me, and I shared about this last month, that spirit obviously wanted Pathwork to come to Pittsburgh. Clearly. I didn't have any interest in bringing Pathwork to Pittsburgh. Spirit yanked me into it, kicking and screaming. But the other side of it is there was clearly a hunger for this work here, or it would not have emerged and developed and grown and become solid the way it has. So just a brief history for the new people. The Pathwork Lectures were received by a woman by the name of Eva Parakas over a 20-year period from the late 1950s to the 1970s. And they are a study of the condition of being human from a very spiritual perspective. And while the focus of each lecture is to point out a different aspect of our negativity and our faults as human beings, it has nothing to do with sinfulness and being saved from our sinfulness. That's what we have been formed by in our traditional religious traditions. But rather it teaches that our basic nature is all goodness and all light, and we are divine, and that this beauty and goodness are blocked by our negativity. So the pathwork is about coming to know piece by piece by piece our negativity, so that we can own it and see it and work with it and release it, so that the goodness that we are can flow into our beings. So the guide introduced the lecture tonight with, I thought it was a little strange, but my program committee helped me kind of get it put together, with the idea of a blessing. And the guide says that by blessing, we mean that someone has a deep sense of goodwill in them, from that deepest place in them, that they want to extend to another. Even if that other is an enemy, I want to extend goodwill. And the other opens up from their innermost place to receive that blessing, that goodwill. So Barbara Jean is going to introduce the evening. Rather than doing our usual meditation, I will ring the bell. This will be our meditation. And she's going to teach us about and create an experience of blessing for us. And when you are ready, I will ring the bell.
So if everyone would be willing to come and gather in a circle with holding hands. And we can make it a large circle. To how you feel a sense of connection and how you are offering a support of connection with your touch, how you're receiving support and connection with your touch, and energetically that sense of giving and receiving. And as Sue said, the guide really is teaching a lot in the beginning of this lecture about blessings, and that the streamings, life's blessings, are always available if we receive them. So there is something about receiving. And so we'd like to invite you to listen to this song with the support of this community and just see what you receive in the moment.
God bless the looters. God bless the breeders. God bless the looters. God bless the winners, God bless the cheers, God bless.
That happens in community when we gather, and just bring to mind something that you would really long to have a blessing for, something, a situation in your life that you were really struggling with, or an intention that you would really love support with, or a person that you're really wanting to work with in a new way or an understanding to deepen. But whatever situation, whatever experience, that you want to take just a few moments now and bring to mind, really having a sense of what blessing, something that you would like blessed, something that you would like this community and the consciousness of this group to support. And after a few moments, giving you a chance to get a sense of that, I'm going to pass around a basket, one in each direction, so it won't take as long. And there are blessings from the different Pathwork lectures that I have on hearts in the baskets. And I'm going to ask you to take one of the hearts and be open to receiving a particular message from the guide in support of your intention and what you're asking as a blessing to you. And once you get your blessing, if you would go back to your seats and really take a few moments and jot down, what's it like to receive? What was it like to hear the song? What was it like to receive this blessing from the heart? And then we'll have a time if you want to share a little bit about that. Okay? So just take a few moments and really open yourself to listening to your own innermost sense of you and spirit within you. And what would you like blessed tonight? Or how would you like to be blessed tonight? Or what are you bringing that you would like support and blessings for? Just invite you to each take a heart, whatever heart feels called to you. You can look at it right away and see how you receive the message and see in what way might it be speaking to you and what you're wanting a blessing towards, a situation or your experience, and what's it like to receive it. And if you want to go back to your seats to jot something down, you're welcome to do that. Thank you. or what connection you have. We'll give you just a few moments to jot anything down. And does anyone want to share what that experience was like for you, or something about your experience of receiving the blessing or being in the community and hearing the song? And it's okay. If you want to, you're welcome to, and if it doesn't feel right to you, that's fine too. Amazing that so many times we don't pay attention to the blessings that are very available and the ways that we can receive, and actually receiving from another is a way to bless them, or to really offer a sense of taking in is a blessing in and of itself. And it's not always the giving, it's also the receiving. And what a gift of reciprocity, which is very different than something's right or something's wrong, or something's a blessing and something's not, that every moment is a blessing, if you're open to it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That was beautiful.
So in path work generally, and certainly in the lecture tonight, we're going to be taking a look one more time at our human consciousness that we have evolved over eons of time, which is self-centered rather than loving, a consciousness that's fundamentally motivated out of pride and self-will and self-centered fear. It's how we are. It's how our consciousness is organized. And if we ever get confused about why it is that we get so turned off to each other and then hate ourselves for it, it's because of these facts. It's because of how human consciousness is organized. And the joke is on us because we're organized in the very same way. You know, we're only different in matters of degree. So, do you know why it's so troubling to you when other people are not good enough? Because we don't feel like we're good enough. That's how anybody in here identify, I don't feel like I'm good enough. No matter what you do, how you grow, how you improve, I'm not good enough. So we can't stand seeing the good enough in other people because we don't feel good enough ourselves. If anyone ever comes to you and says, you're such a jerk, you're such a slug, you know, you're an asshole, as they used to say in Est, you're a loser. You know, the most wonderful, accurate response in the world would be, yes, I know, and so are you. Welcome to our world. It is how we are formed. And the wonderful work on the path is each lecture gives us an opportunity to observe with consciousness one of those aspects of negativity that we all share in common. This is the work of the path. But our greatest problem, our greatest barrier, and we'll talk about this throughout the lecture tonight, is that we want to see ourselves more than we are. We want to pretend that we aren't the way we are. You know, we want to pretend that we are better than we are, right? And we spend most of our time doing that, right? And hiding the ways that we know we're not so great. So it's this pride that is the condition of being human that operates moment by moment by moment by moment by moment that makes it so difficult for us to take a look at the way we're limited, the way we're negative, the way we are self-centered, the way we are motivated by our own pride and our own fear and our own need for control. It's like we want to pretend that we're better than that, so we pridefully don't miss it and own it. And the tragic consequence to this, which is what this work is all about, is that it cuts us off from that being in us which is purely good, loving, kind, wise, truthful, wants to be there for us, wants to heal us, wants to give to us. It's a huge price we pay in being the prideful beings that we are. Just a couple more comments before we go to the next slide. What we do with the negativities that we are, and if you'll start paying attention, you'll see it all the time. We either deny them, or we hide them, or we justify them, or we defend them. We have this relationship with them which reinforces them. We treat these negative aspects to ourselves as if they should not exist. And this is what the lecture is. They shouldn't exist. It's wrong that they exist. And so our righteous judgment about our negativity, our prideful righteous judgment toward ourselves and each other, keeps this negativity locked in place. That's the tragedy. Oh, I'm still on slide two. Go back to two, the process and significance of growing. Okay. So the aspect that we're going to take a look at tonight is how our human consciousness is organized in such a way that it twists and it misunderstands growth on the earth plane. That's not going to make sense until I explain it. We're going to talk about the difference between ordinary growth on the earth plane and spiritual growth. Ordinary growth, as we understand it from our current limited consciousness, we see in a very linear way. And it's all about trying to become better, trying to become more, trying to become bigger, trying to solve our problems, trying to work out our life issues, trying to become less symptomatic, trying to build our self-esteem. Spiritual growth, on the other hand, is about the development of consciousness, transforming the consciousness that we've been discussing, that we all share in common, that is the source of everything that's broken down in our individual lives and in our collective lives on the planet. Our consciousness is the source of our problems. And it's a consciousness that we have acquired and evolved into over eons of our human evolution. It's grasping, it's competitive, it's acquisitive, it's corrective, it's me versus you, it's hostile, and it's based on an insecure and frightened sense of self. This is who we are from human consciousness as it has evolved today. So no wonder what is happening in the world is happening in the world. Okay? This is the condition of being human that we all share in common. So when we are talking about transformation, we are talking about altering something at its very core, its fundamental structure, its very essence. And in aiming to transform human consciousness, we are talking about its very nature from hating to loving. So rather than simply trying to alter the behavior, the feelings, and the thoughts that arise from the consciousness that we all currently live in, we are trying to transform the consciousness itself so that something else can become available. Does that conversation make sense? Yeah? Okay. Number three. So when we consider growth on the earth plane, we think of it occurring in a very linear way. Like a seed goes into the earth, you know, it sprouts, it grows, it starts to grow flowers, and then it starts to grow fruit, and then it harvests, and then it dies. We think of growth on this planet as a life begins, it develops, it matures, and then it dies. So there's kind of an ascending and descending movement to growth as we understand it on the earth plane. At best, at the very best, we get bigger and better and more, and then we die. And this is a scary proposition for human beings. We're very frightened by this. And also, growth on the earth plane is based on a human consciousness, and we're going to talk about this a lot tonight, that is at odds with itself. And every one of us is individuals and within the world. You can see this consciousness warring with that consciousness. The same thing goes on inside of us. And this is how it's set up. Life is either good or bad, right or wrong, positive or negative. We fiercely pursue the things that we think are going to make us feel good and safe and happy. and we fiercely avoid and run away from the experiences we think would cause us pain. This is how human consciousness is structured. So, given that model of consciousness, we are afraid of growth, and we can even resist it and postpone it out of the fear that if we get it, whatever it is, if we arrive, then we're going to lose it. I work with someone who accumulates more and more money to quell his fear of financial insecurity. He's up to millions by now. Millions. Mm-hmm. And the more he gets, the more frightened he becomes. He's more and more afraid of losing it. And furthermore, he's afraid of people taking advantage of him and exploiting him and wanting to be in a relationship with him because he has all the money. Okay, but you know, we would hold that money is good. But the moment we have something, whatever it is, whether it's the love that we yearn for or the job that we've always longed for, at that same moment, we have to face the possibility of losing it. Anybody experience that? When you get it, it's like, oh my God, I think I'd rather not have had it. You know, this is too scary. And for some people, not everyone, but I would say for some people in a major way, and for all of us, everyone in this room, and some places in our psyche, we resist growth and we postpone growth and we don't reach out and we don't risk and we don't try because we're afraid of losing. Most of us are not present to that sense. But if you are, would you mind raising your hand if you've ever felt, I'm not going to go for that because if I get it, I'm going to lose it. Right, okay. So we lose out, of course, in that model, but at least we're in charge of it. We're in control of our fate, even though it may not be a fate that's worth having. At least we feel safe. I didn't get out there and risk and lose, and I didn't get out there and fail. So I'm safe. What I have's not much. It's not worth having, but it's safe. Tali, in one of his, I was just looking to see my written notes here. Tali, in one of his tapes, some of you have probably heard it, talks about how everybody thinks it would just be the most wonderful thing in the world to be successful, I mean really successful, and to be a celebrity. And he said, let me tell you, the truth is, when you're successful, everybody's wanting something from you, hounding you constantly. It's like it's not what it's all cracked up to be, but we all hold that as good. Okay, the plane of duality. Now, going through here, Billy might have, he has some very fancy slides, and I'm not sure I've coordinated my content with his slides, but we're going to give a shot at it. So, again, given how our consciousness has evolved, how our consciousness is organized on the plane of duality. Health is good, sickness is bad. Being young is good, being old is bad. Rich should be, it's good. Poor should not be, it's bad. Life is good, death is bad. Follow the rules should be, that's good. Not to follow the rules should not be, that's bad. Perfection is really good. Mistakes are bad. Things working is good. Things breaking down is bad. Winning is good. Losing is bad. Being clean is good. Being dirty is bad. Being wrinkle-free is good. Having wrinkles is bad. Being skinny is good. Having extra weight is bad. Strength should be, it's good. But weakness should not be, it's bad. Creation and destruction are good, and destruction is bad. Order is good, and chaos and messiness is bad. Power should be, and powerless should not be. Beauty is good, ugly is bad. And on we go on the merry-go-round of the painful duality of consciousness. Okay, let's see if this one works. So, okay. Let's go to the next one. We need the life vest, according to Minot. So moment by moment, we dwell in this painful consciousness. I love this image, Billy. It's great. Clinging to our perception of good, like holding on to a leaky life preserver. It took me a while to figure out what that image was. And then I go, oh, that's a life preserver. Not a life preserver, but a leaky life preserver. And we are frantically resisting and fighting and avoiding the other side, the bad, the feared, like we're fighting ghosts. The problem is that clinging to the leaky life preserver does not provide the safety and the security that it promises. It's an illusion. And fighting against the feared opposite on the other side does not protect us from its power. Has anybody ever gotten protected by being afraid of fear and fighting it? Did that ever help? No. It's an illusion. As a matter of fact, as we fight against what we are afraid of, we are actually giving energy and power to it, to the feared opposite. And we may very well stumble upon it on our path, because we're giving it a lot of energy, a lot of life by resisting it and fighting it and not wanting to see it and not wanting to go there. So what might we discover if we soften and let go of our attachment to what we perceive as good? If we held it gently. The guide says if we could sit lightly in this saddle of goodness. If it's here, it's a blessing. If it's not here, there will be another blessing. Imagine that. This good thing that I would want to cling to is important, but it's not what is most important. What happens if we move toward what is frightening, envision it, be with it, embrace the temporary reality as a part of the life experience here? What if we sit lightly in the saddle of fear rather than give it too much energy and weight by fighting it and resisting what we're so afraid of? What happens when we look for what the blessing might be and facing whatever untruth is underneath the fear that has us be so afraid? Is it really true that we have to appear a certain way to be happy? Is it true that everyone has to be approve of us in order to be fulfilled? Is it really true that if we don't get all that we want and need, that all is lost? Is it really true that if we lose everything that we have, there is nothing left to hold on to? Is it really true that if we had a miserable and unhappy childhood, we're hopeless? Is it really true that if we had a happy childhood, we were only fake and shallow? There was a Hafiz poet, Basho is his name, I love this quote, who wrote, "Since my house burnt down, I now own a better view of the rising moon."
Oh, wow.
Want to hear that again?
Yes.
"Since my house burnt down, I now own a better view
of the rising moon. All right, let's see what comes up here, Billy. I don't know what I'm supposed to say about this one. You want to say it?
Okay, I just did it. Here's this, and then go like that.
There, and then there's more than just the plane of duality. There's the all of the above the plane of duality.
Okay, so I can go there. Okay.
Moving off the plane.
I got it. I just didn't get that one right before that one, but we'll work that out later. So as we begin to soften our clinging to the good, I have to have it or I will die, or rather than frantically avoiding our fears for fear we might die, we can instead ease into facing and being with them and find the blessing by discovering the unreality that fuels the fears, admitting our failings, stripping away our false pride, and we begin to surrender and let go to it is what it is for this moment, good or bad, and it is all filled with life, life streamings, filled with potential for true goodness, and we start to move toward beingness. The truth is that there is potential badness in all good things and potential goodness in all bad things. And so we begin to expand up from the plane of painful duality into beingness and unity consciousness where true goodness live. And the guide says it's not that we invite death or disaster, but in our consciousness we know that when disaster occurs, that the very best in human beings get called forward. We would call that good, not bad. We're called out of our shallow, self-centered ways, and we tap a givingness in ourselves. People dying with cancer have been known to be some of the happiest people in the world. They've moved to beingness. People with the greatest power, beauty, wealth can be some of the most miserable people in the world, stuck down in the plane of duality. People who are in relationships can suffer greatly. Loneliness can be the source of great creativity and contribution. If accepted, we can move into beingness. A hard life can give us strength. Bad things can give us the greatest true growth and opportunity. The sweet current of sweet, indomitable life flows through all things we perceive, either as good or bad. And when we release the block to the experience of this beautiful life current by surrendering our attachment to the good, has to be this way, things should be a particular way, and surrendering our attachment to the negative, this cannot, should not be this way, I will not allow it, I'm going to fight it. This negative attachment to life blocks our experience of the beautiful flow of life in and through and around us. As we resolve this particular attachment, we will tend up toward the big goodness where more and more beingness will reside. Presence will enfold us, and we will arise into it, and it is based on nothing except all that is. The powerful, profound, tender, delicious, sweet flow of life. It has always been here with us, and it is waiting for our unfolding. And the only way we can unfold into it is by our deep, truthful self-responsibility. As we are self-responsible, giving up the clinging, as we are self-responsible by moving into that which we fear, envisioning it, and embracing it, and seeing what the misconception or the distortion is there, we move up toward beingness. Okay. The remarkable and unfathomable thing about beingness is that
it is infinite. As we face with compassion and discernment and truth our attachment, our clinging to the good, and our resisting the bad, and we see that we're doing that and we're moving into the feared and really coming to know it, really seeing our errors and our misconceptions, and this is lifetime work, then we expand into greater and greater beingness. And it's infinite. As we do the work, as we confront our misconceptions, as we own our stuff, more and more beingness comes. And there's no end. It ends never. It expands infinitely. And there are no opposites in the big goodness. The ultimate opposite is non-beingness and beingness. And non-beingness is our current consciousness, which is filled with opposites that we believe in and are attached to. In beingness, there are no opposites. There is just more and more beingness as we own and dismantle more and more of the falseness of who we are by facing our errors, our limitations, our misconceptions, and our consciousness. It's so ironic to me and fascinating that all that is nasty about us, that's wrong, that is in error, is our gateway to infinite expansiveness, if it is owned. And that's the big if. So our nastiness is either our gateway to hell or our gateway to heaven. Unfaced and admitted, unadmitted, we suffer. Faced, we are lifted up into expansion. I'm going to read that again. Our nastiness is either our gateway to hell or our gateway to heaven. Unfaced and unadmitted, we suffer. Faced, we are lifted up into expansion. Again, our greatest error is our human pride. And because of our pride, we want to see ourselves better than we are. And this causes us to deny what is true about us. And this blocks us from all that is good and wonderful and there for us in the universe. I don't know. Okay. Right. Living on the earth plane in duality of human consciousness, and I think we all know and can relate to this, is very painful. And we all suffer. We're deeply attached to our belief in opposites, and certain things must be clung to as good and of life, and other things must be fought off as not of life. And the guide says that when we're not in truth, we suffer. And this is a major untruth that we have to face and dismantle. In order to dismantle it, we have to grieve and feel the pain of the duality that we all suffer. And these untruths are enormously painful, and our feelings of soft pain are the wave that we ride home on to the infinite, to source, to God. So the way out of this dilemma of how our consciousness is organized, clinging to the good and fighting and being afraid of and fighting the bad, is that we have to go through it. We have to experience it. The guide says that it's not enough just to be fascinated with these concepts and these words. We have to apply them to our lives and start working them, really working them, if we're going to have a different experience of consciousness. We have to experience how painful duality is and how attached we are to our belief in opposites. We can only expand consciousness now by questioning our fixed ideas of duality and how we desperately cling to the positive and frantically avoid the negative. In our daily lives, we can do what we call a daily review, which is to honestly examine like the slightest nuance of your mood, the slightest nuance of your reactions, and look for what are the false assumptions here. Where am I not being in truth? Where am I clinging to the good and fearing the opposite? How is that key in what I am suffering right now? This should be. This should not be. This should happen. This should not happen. This is awful that this is here. And this sort of kind of sweet, gentle, kind, that's a very flowing, kind image there, knowing of ourselves, can begin to loosen the grasp of the attachment upon our consciousness. And as this loosening occurs, more and more of the true light of our beingness and our true consciousness and our true presence, bit by bit by bit, will arise into our lives. And there is no greater blessing. This is why we're here. To transcend the non-beingness and enter step by step into beingness. But it is all up to us. It is our choice. It is our work. And it is everyone's capability and birthright, regardless of their station in life and what they have and what they do not have. Consciousness is available now. Say that again. Consciousness, infinite expansion, the divine, is available now. But it charges a heavy price. The price of brutal, temporarily painful self-honesty. I love that image, Billy. It's gorgeous. So if we do our work, unity consciousness is the gift of grace that is given to us by the universe, by source, by life. It's an immutable law, the guide says. You be in truth, even though it's a painful truth, you be in God. We step into truth and rigorous compassion. We step into God. And it's not something that you can believe. It's not a dogma to believe. All we ask is to extend a morsel of faith until you come to know it from experience. Has anyone started to experiencing it yet by being rigorously honest about who you are and your negativities, that more light is coming into your being? Raise your hand. Great. Okay. And then you never stop wanting more. Why wouldn't you want more and more and more of this? You know? Who would not want this? And it is available to everyone. Young, old, rich, poor, haves, have-nots, beautiful, ugly, doesn't matter. It's available to everyone, regardless of your circumstance in life. If you can be honest about who you are and your negativities, it can be yours. So again, by working meaningfully with the untruthfulness on the plane of duality, that what we have and don't have, what we think should be and should not be, can transform from being blocks into being gateways into unity consciousness.
when we face and greet ourselves just as we are, in all of our brokenness, with honest discernment and compassion, the pain-filled opposites become the fodder, the clay, the notes, the movement, the steps, the rhythm, the strokes that lead us into unity consciousness. And Barb is going to do a wonderful meditation for us. As you were sharing, Sue, I realized just where this poem fits in. As Sue was saying, on the duality plane, I want this. This is what's good. This is bad. And our struggle sometimes is that if I'm okay and I'm enough, then I'll have this all the time. And on the unity consciousness, these two seeming opposites are conciliated and brought together. And this poem, The Guest House by Rumi, a 13th century mystic, really speaks to this the conciliatory nature of unity consciousness. So to prepare for listening to that, if you just really let yourself drop into your seat, relax, focus some awareness on your breath. Just take a few deep, relaxing breaths. The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So let's take some time now to open ourselves fully to whatever guest is coming to our door in this moment. Really opening ourselves to what we're experiencing and letting go of any demand that this experience we are having be any different than it is. Allow your breath to carry you into your body, into your felt sense of who you are, into your own unique experience of yourself in this moment. Open just be as it is. You are exactly where you're supposed to be, and whatever you are feeling is exactly where you are to be now, or it would be different. Just allowing yourself to be in this moment. Breath to really heighten any experience you're having, to really allow you to embody your experience at this moment. Allow your breath to carry you deeper into the experience of whatever you are feeling now. And just notice, is what is whatever is here now, do you feel a welcoming within you? Or do you feel tentative about this guest that has arrived? And just be with that. Be with your openness, be with your resistance. That is what is here now. Slowly bring your consciousness back into the room. Feel your seat pressed against the chair, your feet on the floor. Take a deep breath, and whenever you're ready, open your eyes. Thank you, Barb. It was beautiful.
I've got lines going on.
I didn't envision it that way,
darling. Am I still going?
Wow.
Keep going.
Okay, we should be on 14 if we are suffering. How did I miss that one? Go back to that one. That's so beautiful. So, you know, I think it's really clear that, again, when we do our work and we face our misconceptions and we honestly see ourselves in the limited way that we are, the energy moves toward that beautiful, beautiful unity consciousness, which is ever expanding and ever increasing and always available to all. Okay? So if we are suffering and we are feeling helpless victims to life, to cruel fate, our cruel God, if we are judging and we are blaming, we are not in truth. And that doesn't mean whatever you're doing, cut it out, stop it, stop what you're doing. This is one of the greatest pitfalls in the path, that if we see that we're in error, oh, get rid of it. It's not about that. It's about entering it and seeing what the error is and feeling the pain of it. And bit by bit, through a very gradual process, bit by bit, through a gradual process, these errors can be shedded little bit by little bit as we come to know them and be with them through our journaling, through our meditation, through our helper sessions, working with our therapist, working with our helpers. And our painful feelings come with our compassionate discernment that we're in error. It's not always comfortable. But remember that the unitive state always exists in you. It has never not been there. It is here now, and it always will be. You only have to find your way there. The challenge is for us to look at ourselves as we really and truly are, rather than as we want to be or as we want to be seen. As we shed the levels of error, we open the door for the divine in us to come forth and shine through our lives and shine on the planet. And there is no greater blessing. As we begin to face ourselves and our false concepts and our false images and structures and misunderstandings, things can begin to crumble and fall apart. Because the crumbling and the truth-telling can be a scary and painful and confusing process for a while. We call it the creative impasse. The old has crumbled, but the new has not yet arrived or been called forth. Trudy came in to me tonight and said, "Oh, I can't believe this path. You know, for 60 years I believed this, and now I see it was that. Something is crumbling, and how challenging and hard that is." So one of the things to remember is that the truth may be painful when we see the falseness in ourselves, but it will never break nor injure anything about us that is real. That's really important to know. It will never break or injure anything about us that is real. It's the false that's crumbling and cracking and falling apart. And as hard as that is, it's a good thing. So do we have the courage to sit in the rubble for a while without putting another false structure in place? And Billy's going to do an exercise with us.
So this is, I'm going to do... take us through an exercise, and it's kind of not for the faint of heart, so you don't have to, you're just going to do it in your seat with yourself. You're not going to have to share it with anybody or with a partner or anything, but it's just, it might be a little intense. About being with the uncomfortableness. And I'm first going to start, I'm going to read something from the lecture. I'll just read it. Self-realization means shedding the layers of error so that the real self, the divine, eternal being, comes to the fore. So you can shed these layers of pain, error, confusion, and limitation only when you no longer run away from yourself. You got to stay with yourself. When you're willing to look at yourself as you really are, instead of as you want to be, when you accept yourself in the moment, when you do not struggle against your temporary state, even though you understand its error, this is the work you're doing on the path. So that's from this lecture. And now I'm going to read something a little longer. It's really beautiful, and it really speaks to this. It was written a while ago. This Deb Davis is the one who shared this with me, and I just changed a couple of words to... It's from Father André Loef, who's a Trappist monk and a prominent theologian and author. And then I'll set up the exercise. But this is setting up the exercise. The grace of transformation is a day-in and day-out process of embracing that in us which feels broken. The opportunity is to hold ourselves in readiness, to let ourselves be disturbed and emotionally moved by life and by spirit. True transformation means not merely that we will be inwardly wounded, but that we must be shaken to our very foundations. It means perhaps we will be broken, that something inside us will collapse, something like a concrete bunker on which we work perhaps for years with exemplary care, but at which at a given moment began to function solely as a defense system against our deepest self, against others, with the risk that it would, in the end, protect us even against the divine. That collapse is only just the beginning, even though a fearful, terrifying, hopeful one. We must be on our guard not to try to build up what has broken down. This is something we have to learn, for there is always a strong temptation to put up scaffolding around the crumbling facade to tidy it up. We must learn to acquiesce in the collapse, to sit down amid the rubble without bitterness or self-reproach, also without reproaching spirit, but with hopeful resignation, full of surrender and confidence. Okay, so in the moment, give everybody an opportunity to participate, to actually visualize yourself sitting in the rubble, to see if you can, be with it, tolerate it, maybe even embrace it. Maybe say, this is where I want to be. And before I do, I thought I would share some of my own, what I'm dealing with, maybe create a little space. My biggest pathology in life is trying to deal with a hole in my heart that was created when I lost, my mother and all my grandparents from the time I was 11 to 13, to find that perfect unconditional love somewhere out there and ever searching for it and protect myself from the horrible feeling of having been abandoned and being abandoned. So recently I got caught up in, this is really embarrassing for me, in communicating with a woman who was part of my support network. And I got hooked on this nurturing feeling I got from her. And even though there's no romantic pull involved, I found myself hiding my communications with her from my partner. So really what I was doing was emotionally cheating. And Joanne busted me for this. And that's when the crap really hit the fan. Joanne's biggest pathology, and she said I can share what I'm sharing, from a lifetime of brutal treatment from men, is being cheated on and humiliated, which leaves her feeling helpless, the sort of power, other end of that power, divine ray. So this is just like in the last few weeks. She didn't speak to me for 10 days. We live in the same house. She didn't speak to me for 10 days. And which, of course, exacerbated my abandonment issues. So I was, we were both, but in it, it was horrible. And, you know, the bad news is that we both trigger each other's deepest wounds. The good news is that we both trigger each other's deepest wounds. So rather than sweep things under the rug, we each did our own work, and we did a lot of work, and we didn't try to make it better. We really sat in the rubble. In the you know, for me, I can tell you, I sat in the stink of it, and I didn't try to put up a scaffolding and sort of pretty it up and justify, and which is typically what I normally would do. So Joe and I have since reconciled in one episode. In one sense, this episode is behind us. But another, we really know that we have an amazing opportunity to continue today, to stay in the rubble as long as we can. And it's something that while we each have to do it alone, I mean, it's, you know, my thing is my thing, and your thing is your thing, and her thing is her thing. We do take great comfort in knowing that we are all in this together. So now, for those of you who like to do this, this visualization exercise, you're going to visualize in your mind's eye sitting in the rubble. So I invite you to take out something to write with, just so I'll give you some prompting so you could maybe come up with what it is, you know, one thing that you want to visualize for yourself. So think of an area that you feel exposed in life. For example, something you've done that you don't feel you could be forgiven for, or some relationship where you feel inferior, some job you don't feel you're qualified for, you're afraid you're going to get found out that you're not all that, some life situation you're stuck in you can't seem to move out of. So I'll give you another 30 seconds and you can try to think of something that you're really humiliated to know about yourself, that you don't want anybody to find out about yourself. Something, maybe something really shameful you've done, and you just have all this shame about it, and anytime it comes up, you just cringe, and you just shove it back down, and you just hope nobody ever knows about it. It just goes out of your consciousness. But you know it's not going out of your consciousness. You're stuck with it until you sit in the rubble with it, and sit with that helplessness, but not hopelessness. So hopefully everybody has something you want to work on. And I'm just going to say, can you just visualize yourself in the rubble with this item among the ruins in the rubble, the broken concrete bunker that you work so hard to build up around it? Can you just let it just sit there in the middle of this crumbling mess and the dust and the mud? Just embrace that it's not, this is what it is to be a human being. It's not you. It's just where you got to right this moment. Can you feel yourself feeling, not this. This shouldn't be. I want to change this. I don't want to be with this. I want to change it. This is not how I see myself. But just in the temptation to repair that wall, to build up the defenses, to justify, to rationalize, and just say, no, I'm not going to do that this time. I'm just going to be in it. Can you just sit there and acquiesce without reproaching spirit, without reproaching God? Could you be hopefully resigned to being where you are? Can you surrender? So I'll give you another minute. Just try to surrender and be in it. And you might even feel a confidence gained by just surrendering to what is. It's what is. There's nothing to do but to surrender to it, to let it be. don't have to, but is there anybody that would like to share what that experience was like for them? Yeah, Barb.
I could share. This is, you know, this memory I have where I feel like I behaved, I was a bad mom, you know, this incident, and it has haunted me for years. And it's always been this, I shouldn't have done that. Mm. I was so off, you know? And
yeah.
I mean, I've tried to work with it, and this was really how, it was a different. What came to me is I realized why it was still with me is because I've been stuck in my, that shouldn't have happened.
Mm. Yeah.
That shouldn't have happened.
Wow.
I've been, and
really.
I didn't catch, and so I just sat here with, and then I was just experiencing, I mean, I don't think I'm done, I don't know, but it was
right.
This did happen.
Yeah, but maybe you could have that hopeful resignation.
Yeah,
yeah. Surrender.
But I could feel like something open.
Mm.
I felt this openness and I could feel myself holding it differently.
Yeah.
You know, just sitting with this happened. I did behave. Yeah, so
yeah.
That was, thank you.
Yeah.
It was very.
Yes, miss? I don't know your name.
What was amazing for me was mine was a current dilemma, and which has been chronic for a long time, but it's operating currently. And by just sitting with it and not fighting it and not judging it, there was something that was comforting.
Mm. Yeah.
It was just alright.
Mm.
And I see how many layers of it should be. Got to fix it, you know. Just the comfort of just being with it.
Mm.
But I was aware that we have to take the time to do
that. Yeah, right.
You know, that's not where our minds are going to go. Our minds are going to go where we talked in this lecture. Bad, wrong, awful. But, well, I can be with this, okay. And then I started to wonder, if I did that often enough, that expanded consciousness, the divine, could come in and start doing the work, or I would reach the divine and start, the work would start to happen, I would start to be healed.
Yeah.
So that was beautiful, thank you.
Mm, thank you. Yeah, please.
Well, there have been a lot of pounds of rubble in my life in the last few years, and I couldn't really sit with any one of them and choose. I didn't want any of them to be jealous of each other.
Yeah. Good thing you didn't rationalize that.
But what kept coming through was just surrender.
Mm.
And I kept finding this trans discomfort in surrender. And then like this little acronym came through for the word surrender, which I would like to share.
Please.
Okay. Soften underneath resistance. Resurrection emerges. Now dive. Everything rises.
Beautiful.
One more time.
That's for surrender.
Soften underneath resistance. Resurrection emerges. Now dive. Everything rises.
Thank you. Just a quick show of hands. Anybody like, that was the worst exercise ever. It felt like crap, and I absolutely wasn't. In terms of like, I just didn't want to do it, and I just. Okay, good.
Sounds like a steam issue.
I didn't mean that I gave a bad exercise. I meant you couldn't deal with it. Some people can't deal with it. Bert. Like an attachment to the judgment? Like a negative pleasure?
Yeah.
Or
like
you don't want to give up the negative?
Not wanting to forgive myself, not wanting to
to believe that I could have committed such harmful acts. Feeling pretty, like,
yeah,
wanting to surrender.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, dipping my toe and feeling the current, going, oh, it's too,
yeah,
fast, or it's too dangerous,
yeah,
or it's too rough, or I don't know if there's rocks under the water. Or,
yeah. Nice. Thank you. That's good. Yeah, you can be wherever you are. I mean, that's the trick.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Billy. And Alexander, that's such a beautiful thing to see. I mean, it's a painful thing to see, but, you know, to sit with it and say, I'm not ready to give up my judgment, my attachment to my judgment, and I'm suffering that duality, I'm in the pain of it, but I know it. I took a moment to, like, see that. So now I know where my work is, to accept the judgment so that it can begin to soften. Yeah, but thanks for sharing that, because I think that's absolutely what we're up against. Okay. Oh, I love this image, Billy. It's so important for us to remember that we are not alone in our struggle. That nature, the universe, is on our side. And that there is within every single one of us and all around us a beautiful cosmic flow on the order of the beauty that we see here. It's like a bubbling life spring is bubbling inside of us, and the guide says that its motivation, its desire, is to carry us to that place where there are no opposites, where there are no misconceptions and no distortions. And this beautiful flow exists inside of us at all times, waiting for our discovery. And how do we discover it? How does that come to us?
Acceptance, truth, staying your truth and be accepting of it.
Right. Staying in our painful, ugly truth with acceptance opens us up to being aligned with nature, which is going to carry us where we most want to go. Okay, next one. I think we talked about this before, but as we shed the layers of error, the distortions, the untruths, the misconceptions that we stay stuck in, the divine can come forth and help us. And I would say this past year, and I'm delighted to pass it along to you, one of the things that I have come to understand and grasp that I hadn't gotten before is that the divine is always there waiting, wanting to get in and to help us. And the thing that blocks us is our refusal to be truthful and honest with ourselves. So whatever it is that you're working on in your life, whether it's a longing for love, whether it's a longing for a new kind of job, whether it's altering your relationship with your body, whether or not it's altering your relationship with your partner or your neighbors, or whatever it is, you can only be helped with that by life if you get down and dirty and honest about your participation in that problem. And to me, that's an amazing, incredible, beautiful truth. There's help there for us, but we have to pay a heavy price. We have to get real and truthful and honest. And we always end our lectures with, okay, we have a
identified what the negative is, what the limitation is in this particular lecture. And if we do this, if we get this work done, what? And some of the promises from this lecture, and I certainly know it to be true in my life, and I experienced it when Billy was leading us through the visualization, that it wasn't that hard for me to be with the rubble that I was sitting. It was uncomfortable and it was painful, but it was kind of okay because I have come to some trust in myself and life that it's okay to be where I am and who I am and for you to be where you are and for life to be as it is because of the work. So I've come to trust myself and I've come to trust life a lot more, and that's what is available to you as we work on this path. And the very sweet blessing is that every moment can be filled with vibrant life, even when you're sitting in the rubble, facing the thing that you feel most ashamed of, or what you feel most stuck with, or you feel most incapable of moving. There can be vibrant life in that moment, because there is vibrant life flowing all the time in our threatened moments, our frightened moments, our inadequate moments, our humiliating moments. Life is flowing there and we can connect with it. So, and the other promise is, as we do this work, we actually start relinquishing our attachment to, I have to have the good and it has to be this way and I have to avoid the bad and I've got it. That starts softening. And the other thing that starts softening is that we stop insisting on, I've got to have it this way or I'm going to have no happiness or fulfillment. That starts to occur naturally as we do this work. So in closing, we started with a blessing. We did some blessings in the middle, and we're going to do another blessing at the end. So I would like to suggest that you get both feet on the floor and straighten your back, because more divinity can get in if we are expanded. And in closing tonight, I want to, from the bottom of my heart, extend to each of you a blessing. And the guide says that a blessing is a deep, hopeful wish for the goodwill of the other. That's a blessing. But for it to be truly a blessing, you have to open up from the deepest level of your being to receive it. So my invitation is, would you like to receive a blessing? If you would you take a few deep breaths, relax your body, and silently set your intention. I desire to receive a blessing. A gift for it to be a gift, the giver must want to give it, and the receiver must want to receive it. So take a deep breath again, relax your being, expand inside, and open up. blessing to you. May you be open so that divine source can fill you and convey to you the reality of life, where there is nothing to fear and only good exists. One more time. May you be open so that divine source can fill you and convey to you the reality of life, where there is nothing to fear and only good exist. May you receive my blessing. Amen. When you're ready, bring your attention back to